you know, sketching beyond the surface of a project, you know, generally, you know, uncomfortable questions, and, you know, it's not, you know, somebody asking and, you know, me or somebody else responding, it's kind of an open discussion and, you know, generally being critical and, you know, sharing opinions and hopefully other you know, folks can, you know, chime in with their own experiences in, you know, data space, data processing, other systems that do a similar type of job and things like that. So in this session, anything goes, anything, you know, generally discussion, hard questions, everything is welcome. And, you know, feel free to, you know, discuss between yourselves and, you know, I'll just, you know, try to help the conversation move along. But other than that, you know, we don't have a particular agenda. So just a quick of introductions, I'll go like around the room and just make sure that all Apache Beam committers say something about themselves, and then, you know, we'll see from there. So my name is Dallas Maranchi, I'm a PhD chair of Apache Beam, and I'm a software engineer at Google.
I'm PMC of Beam, member of the foundation, and I'm a software architect at TED.
Thomas?
Yeah, I'm Thomas. I'm Apache Apex PMC chair and also a committer in Beam.
All right. Alosha?
I'm Alosha. I'm Flink PMC member and Beam PMC member, and I work on Flink and on the Beam member.
Ma'am?
Ismail, I'm just a resident Beam committer.
Okay, did I miss anybody? I don't think so. All right. So with that, you know, let's start the discussion. I know the first question is always the hardest one to, you know, ask and start, so go ahead.
So what I was wondering during the talks today is, have there any benchmarks on what the performance penalty is versus implementing it directly, or implementing on Beam versus implementing the exact same application logic on the underlying framework, being it Spark or Mink or whatever?
Okay. So generally, when we talk about performance, well, first, does anybody else want to, you know, comment or have an experience on this in this area? All right. So generally speaking, when we talk about performance of different runners versus the underlying system, kind of it's worth noting that, you know, when you use Beam, really what the runner generates tends to be exactly what would you accomplish if you were writing it in the underlying layer. So for example, if you have a do funny Beam, this will translate into a very similar concept in the underlying runner. This will depend on the implementation detail, how it's actually done, but it'll probably be just one simple function calling Java. You know, to translate from, you know, Flink do fun to Beam do fun is usually, you know, for each process element, call process element here. Or like, it's literally one function call, and, you know, so normally speaking, I would not expect any measurable difference between the runners, and in fact, I would expect it in most cases to be exactly the same, because that function call can be optimized, you know, by the underlying language, and I would expect to see no difference. However, if you find a system that is differing, that has different types of concepts, and the translation may be more complicated, maybe you would see kind of a bigger difference there. But in a relatively normal case, I would expect no difference.
But the point is, when you have a runner, it's not an execution service. It's not something where you deploy your pipeline and the runner translates what you deploy inside the execution engine. It's directly embedding the job that you deploy on the execution engine. It's what I said this morning during the talk. You can use a Spark Summit. So it means that the code by itself is exactly the same as submitting a native Spark code. That's why, of course, the difference could be in the translation, the code translated by the runner, but in terms of infrastructure, is exactly the same. No impact on the performances.
Yeah. Anybody wants to comment anything in space?
I was going
to
do a different question. So.
Okay.
I have something for the. There might be. Beam has some requirements for the runner. So there's Beam has its own serialization framework with the coders. So there might be some I think it's probably negligible, but there might be some differences because some other runners might use another serialization framework, and we might use coders that are used for serialization, and there might be some impedance mismatch, if you will, between how the runners normally serialize and how they then serialize if they have to use these coders. And there's also some requirements of Beam, if I'm correct, requires that keys are always compared on the binary representation. So if you everything that you do that has to do with keys, you serialize the data using a coder to a byte array, and then you hash basically the byte array if you were to do partitioning on the keys. And some other runners might simply, for example, use Java hash code, and that can be more efficient than always having to serialize bytes to compare keys. That's where maybe there might be a slight difference.
I have many comments in this space. Does anybody want to comment on this?
I had a reaction to JB's talk, which is related to this, which was just looking at code examples. I mean, it looks good, but if you count the number of lines of code that was on the screen that was relating to decoding, converting data from one format to another, it was just staggering. And that seems like a problem to me. My other thought, which is kind of related, is, you know, we're all moving ahead, you know, with streaming SQL, which is great, which means you'll be able to optimize, you know, if you use a SQL front end to Beam, you'll be able to optimize these queries, these streaming queries. The question will arise, can I optimize queries that are produced via the Beam API? It seems to me that if Beam is all, if the work you're doing is in terms of a particular representation of the data, you know, you're assuming it's in CSV format or Avro format or Java objects, the optimizer wouldn't be able to figure out what this is doing as a filter or a project because the data format is getting in the way. So is there any way of making Beam, allowing people to use Beam at a higher level to say, I want to project these three columns or I want to add these two columns together, rather than having to work in terms of the actual concrete representation of the data?
All right, so slightly unrelated to the previous topics.
It was related in my mind, but maybe it didn't come over.
So let me try to untangle a few things here. So when we talk about you know, snippets that you may have seen, I would absolutely say that Beam, if you use it strictly in Java 7 semantics, has probably more characters than similar systems to write the same amount of code. Right? So we have seen comparisons, you know, word count is 7 lines versus 12 lines, or, you know, we have seen comparisons like that. So indeed, in Beam, there is a little more of expressiveness, you know, or a little more boilerplate around certain calls. There is a blog post on the Beam website, you know, why there isn't, you know, pcollection.map type of API in Beam, kind of, you know, from Google perspective, a historical thing, kind of how we came up with, you know, original, you know, there is just a single apply, and how, you know, the previous system called Flume Java, these things called relatively some degree of mess. So that particular viewpoint absolutely stands. If you were to compare the number of characters, Beam would, for the same pipeline, probably have a few more. In terms of, you know, does you need to convert types to other types and so on? I would disagree with that statement. So generally, all Beam transforms are 100% use Java generics and can operate on any type. So in this specific example, you know, some IOs produce some types and they hard code certain types given the data source that they are reading from. But anywhere in the pipeline, and for any business logic, you can use any type, and it's all, you know, generics, and should not require anything. In those couple of examples, like the pipeline is read and write, and the only point of the pipeline is to translate. So that's why it's, you know, a very high percentage. But if you look at a real pipeline that does actual computation, basically the whole logic is completely generic, and it does not have any, does not force any sort of types on you.
The other thing I mentioned was, JB specifically said a lot of this transforms, we already have utilities in Beam to do, like the JSON and the XML and then JaxB, and he did it to show us how you would do it. So there are utilities there.
I think I mentioned in the first slide some JSON IO, XML IO, and all this stuff. Yep. And actually, I wanted to show you how to do that, beyond the scene. And the point is, those pipelines that I showed this morning, they are mostly integration pipelines. I take from an IO and I send to another IO. Of course, if you have a lot of internal P transform between the two IOs, then as Devo said, you can use any kind of type. It doesn't really matter. There are some P transform that require key value, KD or something, but it could be key value of whatever you want. Again, the pipeline showing analytics are like this.
Also,
I have just one comment. What I interpret of his comment is most about that Beam doesn't have this kind of concept of a tuple representation and that we can project easily like fields or columns, let's say. That's a different story, and maybe, well, this is probably something that we can improve in the sense that there's still DSLs to write. Mm-hmm. And well, for the SQL, we will have to write this anyway. So.
It's kind of that. The problem, for example, of is it possible to automatically push a filter into an IO, right? You don't want to read the entire contents of a table. You don't want to have a parameterized IO. You want to be able to say, read from HBase. Where
do you want your predicate pushed out?
Yeah, predicate pushed out. Or other things pushed down, filters, projects, aggregations, whatever the underlying system supports.
Which
means you need to, the optimizer needs to recognize that this operation immediately after the IO is something that could be pushed into the IO. And if the operation, if all it sees is a do file, it doesn't know that it could go into the IO.
Beautiful. So I addressed this, you know, in a talk earlier today, this specific point, kind of when we talk about, you know, Beam taking a pipeline represented in an SDK and then sort of producing language independent, runner independent representation of that pipeline and then handing that representation over to the runner. So let's talk about that representation of the pipeline and what the runner can or cannot do with it. So basically, you know, the Beam API to do this consists of the 6 primitives. And if runner implements those 6 primitives, it typically can execute any pipeline. So, and if you were to use just those 6 primitives, basically runner wouldn't be able to do much. Everything would come down as a group ID or a path do, or, you know, one of other 4. However, when you get the pipeline from the SDK to the runner, you will typically get, you know, compiled down to these 6 primitives, plus annotations on high-level composites where this primitive came from. So, for example, when you use Beam, you will typically say, you know, combine per key of summing or something. And that is a composite that will probably translate into some part do that assigns keys to integers, then some group by key, and then, you know, something that sums for each key. Like that composite will translate to, you know, 3 or 4 primitives. And when we hand it over to the runner, we will give it in a way that, all right, there is, you know, 4 primitives here, but these primitives form a bigger composite that is summing integers by key. And if you know how to do that in a smart array, you can take out these 4 primitives and do your own very smart group by key or very smart summing or, you know, filtering or something, and that generally applies to everything. And that's kind of the way of, when the runner is aware of what the source is, and that there is, you know, filtering by some condition, it can absolutely fuse those things together, give that information to the source, and sort of inject that information in a different place of the pipeline.
So what the SDK and the runner both expect the scenario and play nice, then the optimization can be held all the way down.
So the thing that Beam enforces is there is this six of primitives, and then you have to implement these six primitives, and every pipeline will run. And then each SDK is free to introduce composites, and then runner can take those composites and do with it if it chooses to or it knows how to do them better. There is no enforcement from the, you know, from the general conceptual level from Beam what a composite is or it can be. It is just passed in as an identifier defined by the SDK, and the runner chooses to do something with that higher level block or not do anything with a higher level block.
When you take the example of an I/O, right, that's reading from HBase, mm-hmm. whatever, and then we do a transform after that, that is not really something that the runner should know how to optimize, right? Because the runner has nothing to do with it. That's a capability of an I/O and a transform. So how could that be done without being the runner in the loop?
Depends on how do you define an I/O, right? So I/O is a transform that reads something, and it's completely, you know, from one perspective, user provided code. From another perspective, you know, a runner can apply the same mechanism and use its own way of reading from the data source. So I can give a very specific example that of something is happening today, right? So Cloud Data Flow Runner does not use PubSub, Cloud PubSub connector inside the Beam code base. So basically, when you take a pipeline that has PubSub IO, Beam Data Flow Runner will replace it with its own representation, with its own implementation that is actually faster. And then, same thing applies. If I have my own implementation of a source and I know how to fuse other things together, I can totally do so.
But to me, those are two different things, right? The sources and the quality of an IO implementation and what the runner does. In my mind, it should not be necessary to re-implement
it's absolutely not
IO
necessary.
Inside a runner implementation.
It's absolutely not necessary, but it can be beneficial if the runner already has an implementation, you know, of that concept.
I understand. So I fully agree with that. Runners may have different implementations to read from Kafka or whatnot, and then they may want to use that. But let's say Beam library contains good source implementations, and we want to provide those capabilities there. So
yeah, but back on the point I got, I would actually refuse that I can be IO. But it makes sense. But some IO does not support that. For example, I'm working on the Cassandra IO right now. And if you want to have an optimized estimated size, you can do a query. I mean, you have to use a complete collection and you estimate the complete collection. For Elasticsearch, it was basically the same. So it depends also on the backend, depending on how you want, how you can estimate the size and how you can split.
So it might be in the interest of the person writing the I/O to add the smarts and package those smarts with the I/O rather than putting the responsibility on the person writing the runner. So if I'm writing the HBase I/O, I want to provide those smarts so that all of the runners can use those smarts.
For you, I mean, if on HBase I can do a filter and compliant with the expectation of a source API, so meaning that I can estimate the size only on the collection with the filter, without iterating on the rule collection, and I can split like this, it's up to the IO to do that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But even the backend as well.
Yeah, but the IO needs to somehow talk to the runner and say, hey, I'm able to do filters and aggregation.
But where is the structure coming from? I mean, you know, hope that's
the test. May I have your attention, please? May I have your attention, please? We will be conducting a test of the fire alarm system. We ask that all guests and hotel staff disregard the alarms and evacuation message. Thank you. We will inform you when the test is complete. Su atención, por favor. Su atención, por favor. Vamos a comenzar una prueba del sistema de fuego. Le pedimos a todos los huéspedes y empleados del hotel que ignoran las alarmas y los mensajes de evacuación. Le avisaremos cuando la prueba está completa. Gracias.
So to take an example somewhat like HBase, Bigtable.io takes filter, and that filter can do all these things. And if I'm offering a pipeline that is limited to relational algebra and has the type of structure that you want to use in relational algebra to push stuff down, then in my SQL DSL or something that I'm using to offer my pipeline, I can easily support the, I can have awareness of, in the SDK that this DSL is based on, I can recognize I'm reading from HBase.io, and I can compile my filter into an HBase filter and push it down there. The question of, I think we're talking something much more general, but I'm not quite sure why yet or where the information we need to do so comes from.
I'll give you one case, right? Which is where you want to abstract the IO, so you're reading from a data source, but you don't know architecture. You might be reading from a view, okay? So, but you still like to be able to apply filters on top of that and have them push down if the thing will load it supports. So, this is all standard SQL stuff, but I don't see why, since Beam is basically creating an algebraic expression, I don't see any reason why this stuff shouldn't be in Beam, just as it is in SQL.
There's probably some algebra there, I don't know what it is. I mean, Beam is certainly richer than SQL. I'll tell you this, at Google, there used to be a much richer algebra for Flume. You didn't just have refunds, you had keep refunds and other things. And then users would annotate their refunds and they'd say, this particular one deserves the keep. And this informed you. You could annotate your refunds and say, this is keep reserving. So if I see shuffle and some keep reserving and another group by keep, I can align one if I know that the keep hasn't changed. And this provides some efficiency gain, but in reality, the annotations were often incorrect. Just people copied something from somewhere else to change the code and got it wrong. So if we have a layer that has a lot of structure in it, it seems easy to apply. But I can see a future in which the elements in Beam, in some sense there's a tuple type that is a core part of Beam, and there are new prints atop those tuples that are fully embraced. I can see that future. It's not there yet. It's not clear to me that that's not still an intermediate layer.
So what about if there were some system defunds or some defunds provided by the system? One of just called project, another one just called filter.
And that definitely takes a new type of data, right? It's not arbitrary types anymore. Projecting implies you have a table as it goes.
I guess so. It can see the columns.
Yeah.
That are coming in, the columns that are going in.
Yep.
I don't know whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. I guess some people can work typeless, and so it's just to do from an object in, object out. Other people might want to work on top of one.
Yeah, I definitely think that's there and useful.
It's RDBs versus data frames.
Yeah, or it's cascading versus Flume Java, right? Cascading. And Flume, Josh Wills created the Apache project.
Crunch,
right? Flume, cascading versus Crunch, very similar in some respects, but a couple of they took it. Like cascading doesn't use the records of typeless, so you spend a lot less time getting your code to type check. But cascading has a tuple model, so it. It's that debate all over again. Perhaps if people could use a Tuple model inside Beam if they want to, but it's not required.
So does the Spark 2.0 adapter for Beam use that's in development plan to use data frames at all?
No, it's still RDB. We are still
Because data frame doesn't make sense right now with BIM. We don't care about the schema and all this stuff. We are very low of that. We use our BIM.
So that would definitely be a performance difference if someone implements like a Python application.
Of course, I mean, you have to compare the same things all together. If you implement your Spark code using the data frame and you use the same, you, it looks like the same code using BIM, actually the BIM Python will be translated using RDD. But if you use RDD, even if you use Spark 2.1, then you would have exactly the same thing. Yeah.
No, I mean, there's definitely a lot of interest and excitement around tuples and all the things you need to do with them. We don't have that layer yet, but like, we need it.
But the other thing about, you know, like relational operators is you can get away from record at the time processing and start processing a batch of records at a time. So, you know, you get away from the one object per row. In fact, you can start doing malloc-free processing, where you're just filling, you know, bypass, large bypasses full of bytes every row that comes.